Hello, and welcome to A-Team Group's podcast on why trusted data belongs in the cloud, brought to you from our Data Management Summit on September the 20th in New York City. The podcast focuses on the use cases and benefits of cloud technology and outlines best practice approaches to establishing a balanced three-way partnership between a cloud provider, data vendor, and user organization. Listen to our speaker, Brennan Carley, Global Head of Enterprise at Thomson Reuters, to find out more.
Thank you very much. So I want to take a little bit of time today to talk about one of the things that we see as one of the most transformational trends in technology in general, but in data in particular. And also maybe just focus a little bit on the fact that this is one of the areas where I think actually the technologists are actually leading the business, and it's incumbent on the rest of us to make sure that we actually understand what's happening here and get on top of it, because it's got some pretty important ramifications. And that's really the transition to the cloud. So the topic is why trusted data belongs in the cloud, and it's a little bit provocative because one of the things that people have been a little bit cautious about actually is trusting the cloud. So I'll kind of talk you through some of those issues. So why? What are some of the issues with data consumption? And I think we actually just heard them on Predrag's panel, a couple of the comments that were made. And I unfortunately wasn't able to hear the whole thing, but I kind of came in just as people were talking about the fact that the business runs on Excel, which means you've got a lot of data that's locked up in a lot of spreadsheets all over, you know, the organization. And you've got a lot of cost, and you've got a lot of overhead and time that's involved in actually standing up infrastructure. You know, there was a comment that it takes 6 months for IT to stand up a server, you know, in the data center or to get a project done, which is why the business tends to sometimes take things into its own hands. And that's exactly, you know, what we see, right? We all consume massive amounts of data, but if you look at the standard way that we run the IT infrastructure, whether it's in a bank, an asset manager, or indeed actually for us even internally at Thomson Reuters, we have all this traditional kind of IT infrastructure, which is not a particular cost-efficient or agile way of running the business. And I'm sure we've all seen the metrics, you know, for every dollar that people spend on acquiring data, you know, there's another 4 to 8 spent on management of that. Now, clearly some of that is a lot of the people costs and the data administration and management and so forth, you know, but a lot of that is also the underlying IT infrastructure associated with it and the fact that it is not necessarily well managed and in many cases very fragmented. So enter the cloud. You know, so the cloud actually, and by the way, when I say cloud, I'm referring broadly to both what we call private cloud, which is organizations deploying servers in their own data centers, but in a more scalable way, but also more importantly, public cloud, Amazon Web Services, Google, Microsoft Azure, you know, and so forth, which are basically IT infrastructure as a utility kind of model. So what do those bring with them? Well, they bring massive amounts of scale, which drives significant cost economics, but also significant agility and flexibility. And what we have seen is, while it might take 6 months to stand up a server in the data center, you can go onto Amazon or Google or any of the large cloud providers, and in 15 minutes you can spin up a server and you can have it available to use. And it's not just the actual physical infrastructure associated with it, but you can also instantiate software services as well. So spin up a database, spin up, you know, some other kind of application. So effectively, it is IT infrastructure kind of capabilities on demand with much greater scalability and much greater agility. And that also allows you to capture more value from it. There might be use cases you have where, say, you only need a particular capability for a week, maybe to backtest a model. Or to run some kind of analysis. Maybe it's some kind of a compliance report that gets done once a month. Rather than dedicating the infrastructure associated with that, you can basically do it on a on-demand kind of a basis, which allows you to extract much more value from the data and use it in a much more economical kind of a way. So what do we see happening? So we've been observing this trend for the last couple of years, and as I said, it actually started with our own technology organization using cloud services internally. And then we started looking at it and saying, okay, well, what does this mean for the business and what's happening in the marketplace? And we started having some conversations with customers, mostly on a bilateral basis. And we had a lot of anecdotal input and information. And we said, you know, we need to get a lot more rigorous about this. So let's do a little bit of study and analysis. So we commissioned a study, and we went out to about 250 different senior leaders CIOs, CTOs, chief data officers, heads of market data, you know, and so forth. And it was across both buy side and sell side, across all geographies around the world. So a pretty good dispersion of input on that. And we asked them a number of questions, and I'm only today going to touch on a handful of those questions. But we've actually are publishing the report in a multi-part series. So if you go on our website, you can download it. And if you follow my Twitter feed periodically, when we post the new segments of that report, we're promoting them there. So I'm happy to make that available. But one of the things that we see is a significant growth in investment in cloud. And what you see on this chart here is going from 2017, 30% of IT budget going to public cloud, growing to 47% over 2019. Now, I'll be the first to say, I actually think these numbers are a little bit over-optimistic. And when you do a survey, obviously people interpret the questions a little bit differently. So I'm not sure if it's in absolute numbers, 30% of IT budget is going to public cloud. But it's I think if you look at net new investment in IT infrastructure, right? So the growth in IT infrastructure, you see a significant amount of that that's actually being allocated to cloud, both public and private cloud. But for me, the two takeaways, you know, not to necessarily focus on the absolute numbers, but really to focus on the trends. And really the two key trends, you know, that we see, one is just the growth in cloud in general and the shift from a traditional IT infrastructure kind of an approach to a cloud-based approach over time, and that is clearly growing. And then the second is, if you look on a relative basis, what you see actually is a shift from public cloud, from private cloud to public cloud, and that absolutely corresponds with what we've experienced and the conversations we've had with our customers. So if I go back 2 years ago, I was talking to CTOs, CIOs of large banks, and many of them were saying, yes, we're investing in cloud, but we're investing in private cloud because security reasons, GDPR, privacy, et cetera. So they were building out cloud infrastructures effectively in their own data centers or on just a dedicated private kind of a basis. And that was 2 years ago, and I would say it was probably 80-20 in favor of private cloud versus public cloud. And when we talk to people today, and we saw this in the survey, that's kind of flipped around the other direction. So it's really gone 80-20, 80 in favor of public cloud and 20 in favor of private cloud. So a significant shift there, really just in the last 2 years. And so that's very, very dramatic. And I hit the wrong button. Okay. We looked specifically at data as well. People are using cloud not obviously necessarily just for data-intensive applications, but for many different kinds of applications. But data is a big driver of it. And in fact, we actually see cloud as a big driver of big data use cases. So if you think about big data kind of things, the scalability and the cost efficiencies of cloud kind of naturally lends itself to those use cases. But then we said, what about market data? What's going to happen there? And what we saw is, as you kind of expect, you sort of, I mean, this it's not drawn as a bell curve, but think of it kind of as a bell curve, right? You've got some early adopters who are already there and who are already using market data in the public cloud. But we see the mainstream adoption of that really taking place over the next 2 to 3 years. So it's not there yet. A lot of banks have toes in the water and are experimenting with cloud. There are some institutions, typically some smaller institutions, that have gone all in on public cloud, including with market data. But most are still in that kind of experimentation phase, and we see the major adoption 2 to 3 years out. And then there's a couple, you know, who are in the never, you know, we will never kind of move kind of a category. Interesting anecdote, by the way, I was in, and it's kind of an outlier sort of a situation, but I was in Moscow about 6 months ago and talking to one of the large government banks, and they said no Russian institution will ever move to public cloud because the public cloud providers, again, Amazon, Microsoft, and so forth, don't have data centers, you know, in Russia, and therefore no one will ever go to it. And then that afternoon, I actually met with one of the hedge funds in Moscow, and they advised me that they had just completed migrating their entire IT infrastructure to Microsoft Azure. So you do have a complete, you know, dispersion there, and a small, more agile kind of a hedge fund is going to be more aggressive about it. You know, a very large, in that case, state-owned bank, you know, is obviously going to be much more conservative in that transition. So what are the drivers for it? So I've kind of touched, you know, on some of these, but the big one and sort of the number one is cost reduction. And it's not necessarily on a like-for-like basis, but it's based on the ability to transform your IT infrastructure to leverage the capabilities of cloud and to leverage the fact that you do have things like jobs that run maybe once a week, once a month. And today you might dedicate infrastructure for that, but basically you pay for it on a usage basis in the cloud, which, by the way, is one of the issues that we all need to grapple with. And when we look at our budgets, you know, we expect we're going to see a significant shift from a CapEx-oriented, you know, budget to a much more of an operational expense-oriented, you know, and usage-based. And obviously, budgeting for usage-based stuff is a lot harder than fixed CapEx or a fixed subscription kind of a model. But, you know, if you look in aggregate, you know, that will drive a significant cost saving in the industry. But the interesting one was data integrity jumped up there, and you say, well, why data integrity? And the answer, and what we came to in talking to customers, is it's effectively a centralization, because cloud gives them the flexibility for many different users, many different departments to access the same data, but to access it off of a easy to access but centralized kind of infrastructure. So instead of the, you know, lots of spreadsheets that have maybe duplicates of the same information but with versioning problems across the organization, it does create the ability to actually centralize that data in the cloud. And you see providers like Microsoft are actually using cloud not just as traditional IT infrastructure, but Office 365, for example, you know, is effectively a cloud-based kind of a capability. It was a bit of an eye-opener for me, by the way, when I got my Office 365 installation, and I went to save my first Excel file, and I went file save as, and the default assumption was save to Azure. So, you know, Microsoft, in their usual way, is going to drag out all of us, you know, through the use of Office into the cloud and into Azure. But it's a good thing, right? Because when you save it into Azure, you know, then the next option is, well, who do you want to share it with, right? And so people can have shared access to the same data. So you do see greater data integrity as a potential benefit. What I would suggest is, since a lot of this, and I'll touch on this in the subsequent slide, a lot of this is being driven by chief technology officers, chief information officers. What we don't see actually is a lot of chief data officers being involved in the drive to the cloud. And I would say that's actually a really critical gap. And I think collectively we need to look at getting our heads around this, because what we don't want is a lot of the technology to move to the cloud, but without the appropriate data governance in place. So to get this benefit, I think the cloud enables it, but it's not going to happen automatically, right? We need to have the right processes and the right data governance in place to actually get that benefit. So I won't run through the rest of them. I've kind of touched on some of these: scalability, ease of processing, and so forth. Security I will talk about a little bit, and I think I've got that in a subsequent slide, so I'll move to that. So let's talk about use cases. So broadly, we see a couple of use cases where people are adopting cloud, and one of the first and where firms are getting some of the most benefit is alpha creation, and that goes to the big data kind of scenario. So we've actually done a number of proof of concept projects with some of our customers in partnership with the cloud providers, where they have taken historical data and real-time data, and they've taken that and they've basically built and back-tested models. And it's actually very easy to build a model, back-test on 20 years of history. And again, some of these projects, you get a data scientist, you know, kid straight out of school, guess what? They know how to use the cloud, right? They come in knowing how to use the cloud. They know how to use Python and R and a variety of these different tools that are just readily available on demand on the cloud. They get the data. They can explore the data. They can find alpha opportunities in that data. And then they can build an investment or a trading model that actually exploits the patterns and the signals, you know, that they have found, and relatively quickly and relatively easy actually turn that and put that into production. So we've seen a lot of those kind of use cases, and as I said, you know, we've partnered with a number of firms to actually deploy that in public cloud. One of the things, by the way, that people ask a lot is, you know, which cloud provider is going to win? And I'm not here to endorse any particular cloud provider. We're actually partnering with multiple of them. But, you know, sort of the obvious Microsoft tie to Excel and Office and so forth, you know, Microsoft is going to win in a lot of those use cases. The data science use cases, we're seeing Google playing very strongly, AI, machine learning, you know, and so forth. And then the large-scale IT infrastructure, run-the-bank kind of use cases, Amazon seems to be dominating there. But it's not a black and white, right? They all kind of play in all of those spaces, but they do have some relative strengths and weaknesses
So we would encourage you to look at your use case and identify, you know, which is the right cloud provider for that particular use case. But for AlphaGen, you know, we're certainly seeing a lot of adoption of Google. And again, it's not just because of the IT infrastructure. It's because Google has actually invested a lot in tools around data science, not surprisingly, to run their own business. A lot of things like language processing, semantic analysis, and so forth. And what they're doing now is they're making those tools available on the Google Cloud Platform for customers to use. So we see a lot of that going on. The other is, if you look more at the middle and the back office, obviously it's less about alpha creation. It's more around operational efficiencies. And what people are finding is, again, for end of day, end of week kind of surveillance reports, regulatory reporting, you know, and so forth, being able to have ready, easy access to data in a very simple way with a cost-efficient kind of an infrastructure, it's driving a lot of those kind of use cases as well. And so I'll talk about this a little bit more later, but you know, we're providing both real-time data but also reference data available for consumption in the cloud to enable those kind of use cases. So where do we see, you know, the adoption actually happening? And again, I think, you know, from the survey, I would say, just it's kind of a gut feel, I think the numbers are probably a little bit over on the optimistic side, at least in the near term, but long term, I think directionally they are correct. And what we see is, you know, pre-trade kind of activity. So that's things like pre-trade transaction analysis, it's alpha discovery, it's liquidity analysis, it's those kind of use cases. We're seeing a lot of adoption there. A little bit less in the actual at trade, which is not particularly surprising because the cloud today is not necessarily optimized for the high-speed kind of trading kind of use cases. But then, again, compliance and middle and back office functions are actually leading, in some cases, the trading functions. And we think partly that's because, again, trading is just much more of a latency and performance-sensitive kind of a use case. It's less of a big data kind of a use case, whereas the regulatory reporting kind of things are more data-intensive. You know, they're not microsecond or millisecond kind of latency kind of scenarios. And they do lend themselves more to spin up a bunch of servers over a weekend or overnight to actually run a job kind of use case. So I mentioned sort of the split between real-time versus non-real-time, and our business, we kind of have this, the full spread from the, you know, the guys who would sell their grandmother to a microsecond through to historical, you know, reference data that goes back for 25 years. And what we see is, you know, if you look on the top, we've shown, you know, the real-time data world, and on the bottom we're showing the historical world, and you see the real-time, you know, skews more to people who are managing their own infrastructure, or there's a little bit of a hybrid, whereas the non-real-time kind of use cases, you see skew a little more to the right, where people are more aggressively using public cloud. And again, we think that's just because of the performance characteristics today of the different public cloud environments. So I touched on security earlier, and security is really an interesting topic. If I go back 2 years ago, most of our customers were telling us they would not adopt public cloud for privacy-sensitive data, security, you know, data, and so forth, because there was a very real fear and a legitimate fear of what happens if I put my data in the public cloud. So if you look at that, there's a couple of things. So one is there's a little bit of myth and legend, right? When you put your data in public cloud, you're not literally putting it on a public web server that's accessible to everybody in the world, right? Public cloud doesn't really mean completely public. What it really means is it's a shared utility infrastructure provided by a commercial vendor, which might be Amazon or Microsoft or Google. But it's not public in the sense of that it's just in the public square and anybody has access to it. That said, if you go back a couple of years ago, the cloud providers weren't as mature as they are today in terms of their capabilities. And really what's happened over the last couple of years is three things. One is the cloud providers have made significant strides in bulletproofing their own infrastructure. So, you know, if you look at how all of our own data centers are run, you know, you can't just walk into, you know, the data center of a bank, right? Well, guess what? You can't just walk into Amazon's data center or Google's or whatever. So the physical security, the security of the servers, access control, all those kind of things has gotten actually very robust. And I would argue that outside of maybe the top five banks in the world, Amazon does a better job of securing the physical infrastructure, the network, the underlying server infrastructure, and so forth, than just about anybody else. And not surprisingly, because they've got the budget and the scale to invest in those kind of capabilities, and because it's their core business. They also, by the way, can attract some of the best and brightest talent associated with running those infrastructures. And I had a conversation with somebody at Google, and they said, well, look at something like network traffic analysis, right? If there's a hacking attempt, somebody's trying to hack into the Google data center, what organization in the world sees more internet traffic and internet hacking attacks than Google and has better data scientists to actually analyze those patterns and assess whether there's a hacking attack, right? So they've got the, you know, the intellectual horsepower and the investment to be very secure there. So that's one. The underlying infrastructure has gotten a lot better. Second is they're actually now providing a lot of tools, encryption tools, data privacy tools, and so forth, to make it possible to secure your data. My call out and my recommendation to all of us is, just because the tools are available doesn't mean that the data is secure, right? We all need to collectively make sure that we're actually using those tools to best effect to secure our data and to secure our applications. So the cloud providers provide you the tools, but they don't mandate that you use them, right? And they don't secure your data for you. So it's gotten a lot better. The tools are there, but there's still an obligation on us to use them. And then finally, the cloud providers have actually made significant strides in things like certifications for security, deployment of data centers in different geographies, so you can meet data residency requirements that exist in different jurisdictions, you know, and so forth. So security has actually gone from being a blocker to cloud adoption 2 years ago, and now what we're seeing is organizations looking at it as a reason to shift out of their own infrastructure and into public cloud. So how do you win? And I've kind of alluded to this a little bit. So to actually succeed in cloud really requires a three-way partnership between us as the data provider, the customer, and the cloud provider. Because candidly, it still is somewhat early days for a lot of these use cases, and so you need to have all three participating in. So what are some of the things we found? So most firms have a multi-vendor strategy. As I said, the different cloud providers have different strengths and weaknesses. So most of the firms we talk to are using different cloud providers for different use cases. Google more for the data science, Microsoft more for the end user workflow, et cetera. In terms of the approach, we're seeing a balance between, some people are taking lifting and shifting existing applications and moving them to the cloud, but increasingly what we're seeing is people are actually re-architecting applications. And to really get the benefit, you need to actually rewrite and optimize your application for cloud. So we're now seeing, you know, that is clearly growing. And then the last is, you know, there's clearly an identification that you need to manage your data. You need to have good data. It's got to be well-structured. It's got to be clean. You need to have the right governance around it. It's got to be linked, you know. And just moving it to the cloud makes it, it enables some of those things, but it doesn't actually give you those benefits directly. So you still need to make the appropriate investments in that data management. So how are firms addressing it? What we see is it's mostly driven by chief technology officers or other senior technology people at the organization that are driving the transition to cloud. In some cases, you know, people have set up centers of excellence, best practice teams, SWAT teams, whatever you might want to call them, put in place cloud czars, you know, and so forth. But while 90%, you know, have a CTO that's driving their cloud strategy, only 57% have a defined data management strategy. That's a gap. Right, so that's something, you know, that I think that we need to address and recognize that cloud is coming, and if we don't wrap our heads around it and actually put in place the right data management processes, we won't get the benefits that we expect to see from cloud, but actually potentially just replicate some of the mess that we've all got today. So I'll take some questions at the end, but, you know, just before I get to the questions, just quickly what we're doing, and I don't want this to be a sales pitch, but we look at cloud really through three different lenses. So the first is what we're calling our on-the-cloud strategy, which is how do we build our own applications on the cloud? So our own technology organization has adopted what we call a cloud-first strategy, which is to say any new applications that we build or anything that we do that is a re-architecture or rewrite of an existing application, the going-in assumption is it's going to be done in public cloud unless there's a compelling reason not to. But that's really, that's just us in our own back office. The second, which is really much more interesting, you know, to me, is we see our customers adopting cloud. So we're actually changing our product strategy and our delivery strategy to recognize that and to make it easy for you to consume our content in public cloud. So that's really us looking at cloud and what we call in the cloud. So we want to be, and we are moving in the cloud, so we'll make our content available there native to enable all those different use cases so people can consume data in a very easy kind of a way. And we see it just makes it much easier. Good example, we just recently launched what we call Electron Real-Time in the cloud. Historically, when we delivered our Electron Real-Time service, between signing the contract with the customer and go live was typically 6 to 9 months. Site surveys, installing circuits, installing servers, da-da-da-da-da, right? And 6 to 9 months later, you're live. The first customer we had on Electron Real-Time in the cloud, which was in Amazon, from the time we basically handed over the keys to them and you know, agreed, to the time they had their application up and running and consuming data was an hour, right? So from 6 months down to an hour, just a dramatic change because it was basically just a software provisioning. It was just flipping a couple of switches software-wise. So we see that as a massive transformation. And then the last is we're pivoting our own services and delivering things, you know, in a cloud-like way. So applications that we provide, we are moving to effectively minimize or eliminate any of the footprint on the desktop and just deliver them as a service so that you can access them over the cloud. So cloud has actually become very integral to our strategy. So I think we've only got a few minutes left, but we do have some time for questions. Are other heavily regulated industries dealing with sensitive information showing similar public cloud adoption rates? We haven't studied that directly, but I've followed the literature and talked to the cloud providers, and the answer is yes. I mean, we are seeing it. Amazon in particular and Microsoft, you know, have big businesses with the government, and they have implemented a number of government certifications because they are seeing significant adoption of cloud by government organizations. Healthcare tends to always be slow in terms of adoption of new technology, but there is adoption that is going on in healthcare as well. How do you effectively equate cloud stored data with trust? That's a good one. I don't think you do. I think cloud allows you to centralize it, but it doesn't give you trust, right? You need other measures to actually ensure that you can actually trust the data. Cloud is all pay as you go. How do you plan to address this expectation? I'm not sure I understand the question. So I guess part of it might be, you know, how do we charge for data on a pay as you go basis, right? Given that we're in the data business. And the short answer is that's something that we're working through. And we're having a lot of customer conversations around that. The challenge is twofold. On the one side, while there's an appeal to paying kind of on a usage basis, there's also a budget challenging kind of a problem. People don't want to pay as you go and then discover at the end of the month that they've consumed, you know, it's like your kids using your cell phone minutes, right? You discover at the end of the month, oh my God, what have you been doing, right? So then you go to that flat rate kind of subscription plan. But the other is, for us at least, the ultimate content owners in many cases are organizations like exchanges, and exchanges still want to get paid on a monthly subscription basis, you know, not on a usage basis. So I think that's one that collectively we as an industry are going to have to sort our way through, and I'll be honest, you know, we're a long way from sorting that, and it's not one I think that we can do on our own.
Thank you for listening to our podcast on putting trusted data in the cloud from our recent Data Management Summit. For more content on data management from A-Team Group, visit our website at datamanagementreview.com. You can also sign up on the website for our next Data Management Summit, which will be in London on the 21st of March 2019 and is free to attend for all financial institutions.